cast your mind back to January this year, beloved listeners, when the former government detained a tennis star at the Park Hotel in Melbourne, and suddenly everyone remembered that a whole bunch of refugees had been detained there for year after year, being denied visas indefinitely. The Albanese government has set a different tone, allowing the Bilawila family to return home and granting them permanent visas at the beginning of August. You know, it cost more than $7 million to lock them up. And since 2013, our offshore detention policy has cost us over $9 billion. My next guests say that when refugees aren't included in policy making, the results are often short-sighted and ineffective. And they're at a conference being held in Sydney this week and are hoping the result will be a new national refugee policy developed with the input of people who have actually lived the experience. Naji Wazefardost and Shazar Ali Rahi are co-founders of the Global Refugee-Led Network, and they're running the conference in collaboration with the Centre for Policy Development and the Australian Communities Foundation. Najiba is also co-founder of the Asia-Pacific Network of Refugees, and Shazar is co-founder of the Global Independent Refugee Women's Leaders. Shazar is visiting Australia from Germany, where she settled after fleeing Syria. So, to you first. You were actually an advocate for refugees in Syria before becoming a refugee yourself.
Yeah, thanks for the question. Actually, I used to work with UNHCR supporting refugees, and we were working in different approach until I became a refugee myself. I noticed how it is really so big difference between working for refugees and being a refugee yourself.
What were the circumstances that forced you to flee Syria?
I think everyone in the world knows about the conflict in Syria, and I was working there. But afterwards, the situation became worse, and that the dictatorship regime and all of this kind of stuff happened. Then I was threatened many times personally, because I also working with the UNHCR, they thought that I'm a spy working with the international or with USA, because sometimes they're mixing up UN with the US, because they thought that one unity. So I felt like I am not safe anymore. Then I start my journey to seek asylum somewhere else to find the safety first, which is I never thought about it as it is an important thing before I became refugee myself.
Najiba, how about you? You fled Afghanistan with your parents at the age of 10.
So I'm originally from Afghanistan. And as I'm sure as many of you know, Afghanistan has been in war for decades. And it really has left very little signs of justice and humanity for many of us. And unfortunately, we're seeing exactly the same history repeating today. And Afghanistan is in crisis again, due, you know, to persecution and ongoing sufferings by my people, the Hazara community. We were left with no choice than actually fleeing the country in any way possible.
And so you're from the Hazara community?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, okay. Now, when you arrived here, of course, no knowledge of English, but you've now got a Bachelor of Medical Science and you are a global refugee advocate.
That's correct, I am.
Absolutely marvellous. Now, the two of you co-founded the Global Refugee Network. How did you meet and come to the conclusion that it was needed? And to you first.
I always have this memory in my mind. I never can start any talk about any activities that we did before recall and revisit that moment. We were in the NGO consultation in Geneva. We were invited as a speaker for side event even. We were not allowed to be in the NGO consultation. And at that moment, in 2017, we were invited to talk about the importance of being a refugee on the table, to be participate in this kind of debate and discussion about our lives. And our slogan, if we can say, at that moment, or motto, was nothing about us without us. At that moment...
Nothing about us without us.
Yes.
It's a pretty good slogan.
Yeah. No one knows better than you. Huh? So at that moment, I was speaking and Najiba was speaking. So afterwards, in the break, we said like, oh, you are from Australia. I'm from Syria, living in Germany. How come we share the same problems in different contexts? And then we thought that maybe not only us, there is among the refugee community millions and millions. And we need to have a platform where all refugees come together and talk and take the lead over their lives instead of being leaded by someone else.
Najiba, historically, refugees have been denied a voice in discussion about their present and future lives. What about your own experience of being a refugee here? Did that teach you about our attitudes to asylum seekers?
Definitely. My personal journey being an asylum have basically shaped who I am today. And that's one of the main reasons that I have become a refugee advocate. When we arrived to Australia back in the year of 2000, you know, the government was led by John Howard's policy. And you can imagine how difficult it was back then. Australian detention centers were quite of an unknown phenomenon to the Australian community. It was much more of a hidden agenda by the Howard government. So we didn't know about, you know, the detention center that existed in Australia. So obviously we faced with a huge shock and disappointment being known that we had to be locked in a place in Curtin in the middle of a desert with no access to the outside world, being abandoned from people, being photographed like prisoners, being given a
you
number.
You were in a concentration camp, for heaven's sake.
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shazai, you've worked with refugees in your own country, but now you are witnessing what's happening to refugees from Ukraine.
I don't know if I can say that kind of the global discrimination against refugees by their, like, if we can say, ethnicity or by their nationality, by their color, and so on. We all have the solidarity for the Ukrainian refugees. And we know, because we as Syrian refugees, for example, witness and lived everything like the Ukrainian now do. But the problem is we were not having any access like what we see now for Ukrainian refugee had access for everything, especially in Europe.
Now, Shazar, clearly different nations are approaching the Ukraine issue differently. Is anyone doing it particularly well?
That things that I want to say, it's though we felt like other refugees than Ukrainian, we felt a little bit discriminated. But also the Ukrainian experience or crisis put that if we have the will, we can move forward. And I think we have to have it in a positive way. Like this Ukrainian crisis showed the people that we can do. And if we can host all the Ukrainian out of sudden, and this is a good example how the whole world solidarity works, we can do that for other refugees.
Najiba, you're unstoppably energetic and you've been meeting with officials from Home Affairs, Foreign Affairs, the Department of Immigration, as well as the new Immigration Minister, Andrew Giles, this week. What have you been talking about?
We've been communicating, obviously, to all the, you know, our current politicians. First of all, we've been quite optimistic that with the new government in power, you know, we realize that there's an ear to listen. There's an understanding to the situation of refugees. We've been having conversation with Minister Giles in ensuring that those that are seeking asylum in our shores in this country are actually given and provided protection for once and for all so that they can escape limbo and uncertainty. And more importantly, we've been speaking to him in several consultations and dialogues about the importance of providing protections to Afghans, considering that the crisis is still ongoing.
But you're also anxious to see good policy turned
Indeed.
Into action, aren't you?
Indeed. Indeed. We've been hearing promises, obviously, prior to the election, and also him being quite committed to ensure that refugees are provided indefinite protection, especially those that are on shore. But I feel like there are also other policies that exist from the previous government, which needs to be reviewed. If you look at the Bali process, for instance, if you look at the Indonesian refugee policy, which has, you know, blocked many of Afghan refugees in that country for very long years, for many of those who doesn't have a home to go back to.
Najiba, I mentioned earlier the immense amount of money we've spent on immigration detention. I guess that one of the things you discussed was letting people seeking asylum live in the community on bridging visas.
Indeed. I strongly believe from my own personal journey as well, being in detention centre, that, you know, detaining someone should be really the last resort. You know, there's so much that we can actually achieve and benefit as a country, as a nation, if they're placed in the community. Not only that they're going to be the future of this nation, but at the same time, it's much more cost effective. And you just given some figures at the start of your conversation.
We contacted the Department of Immigration and they confirmed they're trialling an alternative approach to the settlement of refugees called the Community Refugee Integration and Settlement Pilot. Did you discuss that?
I mean, that has been part of the conversation for a while. You know, and we've been obviously trying to compare that to community sponsorship model that exists as well from the Canadian model. And all of this is really about, you know, how do we prioritize resettlement as we speak of the crisis, for instance, the Ukraine crisis, the Afghanistan crisis. And hopefully this pathway not only will look at a way of, you know, feeling the budgetary implications that the government is actually facing from the previous government, which I think is not because of the humanitarian, you know, demand that we have. It's more about the kind of investment that we've put into our resettlement and complementary pathways that hasn't been holistic.
Now, it's one thing being let out of, say, the Park Hotel in Melbourne, but it's another providing support for people then.
Indeed, indeed. And again, if I compare this with my own personal story, when I was released from detention centre into Tasmania, it was quite difficult for me to integrate into a community where I had no access to schooling, where I had no support, you know, to the local shops, where I had no idea what education meant. So I feel like, you know, being able to orientate, being able to provide resources and sustainable support so that people can access to employment, so that people can access education and all the other forms of living in Australia is so important. So releasing is not going to end there. It's more important to be able to give them access to basic needs, including Medicare, education and employment.
Before I go back to Shazar, the new government does seem to have a different approach. But despite this, under our current mandatory detention regime, refugees can still be detained indefinitely and without access to a court.
Yeah, and this is exactly what we are trying to advocate in this week, having the presence of Global Refugee Network, having real testimonies of refugees who have made a huge impact in different parts of the world once they have resettled. Using those examples, using those stories, we actually want to tell the Albanese government that that shouldn't be the case.
Now, Shazar, the work you've been doing has a focus on the particular difficulties for women in war zones and then the issues they face as refugees. Tell me about that.
Exactly. Like the refugee journey is really hard for everyone, but women is seen more vulnerable, if we can say, because they were targeted. They were used as a weapon during the war zone. Like they were raped, harassed, and all many things like we can say. So women, girls, and LGBTIQ, they have more an extra burden on them as a refugees. What we are trying to do is we are trying to have the voice of those refugee women to bring them to this policy making to have change their lives in a better way because they face a lot of domestic, even in addition to all the war problems and refugee journey, they face like kind of domestic abuse by their spouse, by their family. So many issues is there and they have no right mostly to speak up for themselves. They have no right to work sometimes. So we are trying to encourage them, to give them the space, the safe space, if we can say, to talk and to express the needs they needed.
Najiba, before we started the interview, I was delighted to learn that you're a regular listener. So you know how many programs we've devoted to what's been going on in Afghanistan. And we've just marked 1 year since the fall of Kabul. And there was a report in The Economist this week that suggested that while the country is poorer and hungrier than ever, it is also safer. Can you give credence to that?
Yeah, unfortunately, I did see that as well. And it was quite disappointing to see that the media is definitely misleading in that. The country has definitely gone worse in terms of security. What is different as we are marking the 1 year since the Afghanistan has gone into the hands of the Taliban is that we've had a huge censorship of media into the country. All the international media presence is gone. We've got a growing restrictions that's adding to the list for women and girls. Women have been restricted from having access to public life, being taken out of schools, being taken out of their jobs. And similarly, we've been just more recently in the past 2 months, we've been witnessing a lot of, you know, suicidal bomb attacks in main several cities like Kabul and Balkhab, you know, and again, this is in addition to the earthquake just happened recently. So I would definitely not agree to that because all the testimonies and all the incidents and all the tragic scenes that we've seen up until now are all indications towards a worse security situation than better.
And Shazar, our hearts must go out to the women in Afghanistan who are still trapped there under these terrible circumstances.
Yeah, sure. We were campaigning also in Europe about that, and we are trying to let people know that that is not the situation and that should be stopped. And women needs to have a safe pathway to have their rights to go and to express themselves, not to be in a prison.
Next year, there is a global refugee forum in Geneva run by your old outfit, the UNHCR. And ahead of that, you're both organising a global refugee summit. But you have to find a country that will host it.
That's right. We've been organizing this global summit of refugees on purpose prior to the Global Refugee Forum, which is done by UNHCR, so that we can take and amplify the voices of refugees at this important global platform policy discussions. And we've had struggle to choose which country because not every country is actually friendly to provide visas to refugees from different parts of the world. And that's one of our main challenges, bringing refugees together face to face.
Shazar?
Yeah, in addition to that, actually, we are trying even to tackle those people who are even stateless, so they have no chance even to come to the summit. So what we are trying to do also to have our find ways to bring their voices, like using the media and using like kind of the technology to bring them there.
Repeat that wonderful slogan of yours for me, please.
Nothing about us without us.
And on that note, I thank you both for coming in. Najiba Wazavadast, co-founder of Global Refugee-Led Network and co-founder of the Asia-Pacific Network of Refugees, and Shazar Alirahi, chairwoman of Global Refugee-Led Network and co-founder of Global Independent Refugee Women Leaders. You are both incredibly busy and marvellous people. Coming up, political journalist Michael Pascoe on men, friendship, politics and death.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.